Thanksgiving is just a week away, and whether you're having a big group over, are invited to spend the holiday at someone else's home, or you're just keeping it low-key, our guest today will have great ideas to make it special. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Christy Rost is the author of 3 cookbooks and is a television and radio personality. Her annual PBS holiday special, A Home for Christy Rost, Thanksgiving, will air on Wisconsin Public Television this weekend. And Christy, welcome to the program.
Judith, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be on the show.
Well, and you just got back to Texas after spending some time here in Wisconsin.
I did. I just flew in last night. And thank you so much for the incredibly cold and windy weather. When I hit Wisconsin, it's like, oh my gosh. Well, and I was out at 5:30 in the morning on Tuesday to do a television cooking segment, and it was 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what 3 degrees felt like.
Well, this is perfect January weather that we're experiencing in November in Wisconsin.
It is, and you know I'm going to be all set for the new year.
Well, there you go. And look at it this way. You have great stories to tell all those people in Texas who just couldn't handle it like you could.
Well, I like to think I'm still the hardy sort.
There you go. Well, we will definitely talk about why you were here in Wisconsin, because it's a very special reason, and it ties into our second segment today. But, you know, Thanksgiving is a week away. What do you love about Thanksgiving?
I've always loved Thanksgiving, and I think it's because it's that special time to gather with family, and weather is you know, everybody's weather's cooling down. In your case, it's freezing to death, but it's cooling down. Everybody starts to kind of nest again in the house, and fire in the fireplace, and darkness comes early, which for me is not a problem because I always decorate the tops of my china cabinets and bookcases and things with little white lights at this time of year. And so it gives me the perfect excuse to plug them in and turn them on and just have that nice soft glow as darkness falls. And to all those fabulous smells, the aromas of the turkey, and truly the tradition of it all, Judith, and not just as people are gathering, but the traditions of creating the meal. To me, it's so, so important. It's the thing that links me back to my mom, my grandparents, and all that, because I think like many people, at Thanksgiving time, we tend to at least incorporate a couple of family recipes into our menu. And that is what helps connect us to those we love and generations past, and usually special memories, many of which can be childhood memories.
And it's the taste of childhood for many people.
It really is. And many people, I know I'm included in this group, we have food memories and flavor memories.
Sure.
And just the aroma of the turkey or the mixing of the, you know, the whisking of the gravy in the pan or whatever. I know every time I make gravy, turkey gravy, I always think about and can almost taste my grandmother's turkey gravy. I can never get it just like hers. I cannot figure it out. I keep trying. I haven't quite figured it out, but it's close. And that's kind of my goal. You know, I always want my gravy to be just like grandma's.
Right. So can we enjoy Thanksgiving without being total gluttons?
Well, that's a tough question because no. You know, is it possible? Are you asking, is it possible to eat a little lighter for Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, I think part of it is, like you said, that there are often so many, you know, recipes like, oh, we have to have, you know, the sweet potatoes. Well, we can't not have the mashed potatoes. And then we have to have the, you know, even if you take just like a tablespoon of everything, you still have a heaping plate often. Yeah. And actually, one of the things we'll talk with about you is how we can, you know, keep the enjoyment going with some leftovers. And maybe that's the key. I want to let people know we're talking with Christy Rost, author of 3 cookbooks, and her annual PBS holiday special, A Home for Christy Rost Thanksgiving, will air on Wisconsin Public Television this weekend. She is joining us by phone from Texas after having just experienced our frigid Wisconsin weather. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite dish for Thanksgiving or a family tradition that goes with the holiday? We'd love to hear about that. Or maybe you need a little help in getting ready for that big Thanksgiving dinner. Christy is more than happy to share her experience and advice. Christy, do you always make a turkey, or does something else sometimes appear as the main attraction?
I always make a turkey. I just do. It's I adore the flavor of turkey. I adore the aroma of turkey. But part of it also, it goes back to what we were talking about a few moments ago about tradition. You know, there have been many, I'm one of 4 girls in my family. There are no boys. No. It's all girls. And every Thanksgiving morning, if any of us picks up the phone and calls the other, we're all in pretty much the same stage at that particular moment on Thanksgiving morning. We're standing in our kitchens, we're in our robes and slippers, we're watching the Thanksgiving parade on TV, and we're all working on our turkeys. We're cleaning them out, we're getting them, you know, trussed and all that. And my mom is doing the same thing. And so even though we live in different cities, different states and all, we're connected because we're all fixing our turkeys, getting them prepared kind of together. Mm-hmm. And it's like a family bond. So that's a really important aspect for me. And so, yes, you bet I always roast a turkey.
Well, I grew up in Chicago in a very Italian, Irish, Polish area. Uh-huh. And what, you know, for one of my very good friends who was from a very Italian family, you know, it was a traditional Thanksgiving lasagna. And, you know,
and
if it wasn't lasagna on the table, you know, there would have been an uprising. Now, I am married to a Frenchman, and we're having a very small gathering, so we are compromising and having a wonderful rabbit as the main course, and then I'm making all the stuff that goes with turkey, because, you know, what goes with turkey will go with rabbit. So
yes,
for us,
which
it's
will
kind
be
of
that
a
touch of tradition for
exactly.
You.
So it's kind of blending the two.
See, I think that's fabulous. And in fact, I grew up, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I lived in the Midwest and in the Northeast a good part of my early life. It wasn't until I was in college that I ended up in Texas. And I grew up on bread stuffing and, you know, and everything that that means. But after being in the Southwest for several years, everybody was having cornbread dressing. And so often, you know, when I had cornbread dressing, it was kind of dry. It didn't have a whole lot of flavor. And I thought, I don't think I really like this. But I thought, okay, there's got to be a way to soup this up. And so actually over the years, then I adopted making cornbread dressing. And so I brought in a very Southern tradition to my very Northern approach to Thanksgiving. But I added all kinds of beautiful flavors to it. I added the celery and the onion and dried cranberries and fresh apple and lots of fresh sage.
And Italian sausage.
Yes, absolutely. Italian sausage. You better believe it.
So you've got the cornbread, you've got the Italian sausage, and then you've got these great, like, savory herbs and spices, but then the sweetness of the cranberries. And I think, do you also have golden raisins?
The chewiness, too. Yeah. You know, that all that texture going. And yes, and so, you know, you could serve this in your house, Judith, because it would fit in well with, you know, the Italian heritage that you
right.
have. So, yes. So, Yeah, you know, and I think it's great, especially young families starting out, young couples starting out, to really build their own traditions too. And we all start with traditions we grew up on. And I think a lot of that is because we stood there in the kitchen and we either watched or we helped. So that's kind of a comfort zone for us. But then as you start to gain your own comfort and blend the, you know, the traditions of the spouse or the partner or whatever, then you start to maybe feel like experimenting and bringing in some of that so that you create new traditions. I think that's a really, really good thing to do for Thanksgiving and for the holidays, totally.
I'm not sure if it ever really happened, but, you know, the story goes around that someone always cut the legs off of the turkey before roasting it because, you know, that was how Grandma always made it. And no one ever explained why. And it turned out that Grandma's oven was too small. And so
too
she
small,
had to.
That's right.
But now here, everybody since then has been cutting the legs off because that's how Grandma did it.
I know. Isn't it funny?
Well, we are talking with Chef Christy Rost. She's the author of several cookbooks, and she's also a television and radio personality. Her annual PBS holiday special, which is called A Home for Christy Rost Thanksgiving, is going to air on Wisconsin Public Television this weekend. You'll have a few different chances to see that, and we'll talk about when that is airing in a little bit. But we're hoping that you'll also join in. We'd love to hear about your Thanksgiving traditions. If there's a dish that absolutely has to be there, maybe there's a dish that you hope you'll never see on the Thanksgiving table again. Either way, we'd love to hear about it. You can call in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment or Thanksgiving Day photo on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mehler Show. Mehler is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Jason Butler, our on-air producer today. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mehler. I hope you'll stay tuned because at 11:45, we're going to talk with Dr. David Girard about urologic cancers. It's a subject close to the heart of our current guest, and that guest is Chef Christy Rost. Christy, actually, maybe we should just take a pause and talk about the reason why you were just up in Wisconsin and the connection with the Carbone Cancer Center.
Oh, thank you so much, Judith. Yes. Well, I guess I should start. My father was a patient at UW for 13 years, and he had renal cancer. Mm. And so thanks to Dr. Girard, actually, and many of his colleagues, my dad enjoyed a very robust life living with renal cancer, really until the very end. And he passed away just 2 years ago, September 2012. 2 months later, in November of 2012, the Department of Urology had its very first fundraiser to raise funds for cancer research, for renal cancer, and also for things like stone disease and prostate cancer and bladder cancer, even male infertility and things like that. So they had their first dinner, and my mom went, and I thought that was really brave. My parents had established a chair, a research chair at UW, which continues, and so my mom was very personally involved in all this. So she attended the dinner, and I asked her afterwards, I said, so how did it go? And she said, well, it was very nice. There were about 90 people. Most of them were doctors or their wives or husbands or partners or friends. And she said there was a little silent auction, and she said it was held in kind of a small place. She said actually it was rather dreary. And I said, oh, well, you know, I'm really glad you were there. It was brave of you to go. And she said, I'm really glad I could help out. So anyway, I got thinking about that, and I thought, okay, look, I had been waiting for the right cause to offer my services, to step up and say, okay, I want to be involved in this. And many things had come my way, and they just never felt quite right over the last few years. But this one hit me, and I thought about it, and I thought about it. And in February, I picked up the phone, and I called the UW Foundation, and I spoke with Deborah Hobbins there. And I said, okay, I understand you're going to be doing this annual dinner to raise funds for research for the Wisconsin Urologic Research Institute. I would like to get involved in this. And I said, I'm the daughter of, you know, and I told her. And she said, really? And I said, yes. She said, wow, well, did you have any ideas? And I said, well, actually, I've been thinking about this. I know exactly what I'd like to do.
That's great.
So we launched the first ever Sky's the Limit culinary concert. And in November of 2013, we had the first one. And this week, we just hosted the second one.
And so what is a culinary concert?
Well, you know, it's a toe-tapping, very slapstick, unusual, high on energy and fun culinary cooking class in the middle that is given during a seated dinner.
Wow.
And I from the start, I said I wanted to bring in some of the celebrity chefs that I know. And so last year, we had Gail Gann out of Chicago. And many people know Gail Gann. Mm-hmm. She's pastry chef. She had a Food Network television show, Sweet Dreams. I've known her for years. And the two of us had a blast. And you know, it was so fun. So this year, I invited my friend Jim Dodge, Chef Jim Dodge is a James Beard Award-winning pastry chef from San Francisco. He's written a number of books. He's just he's just an all-around nice guy. And when I told him about this event, he said, "Chrissy, if my schedule's clear, I'm there." And everybody loved him, absolutely loved him. And so the way the evening went was when people check in, then they go to the silent auction. And of course, the silent auction has somewhat of a culinary theme. Mm-hmm. And so I get a lot of things donated from my friends in the culinary area, and so we had cookware that came in and, you know, cookbooks that came in and all kinds of things. But on the other hand, we also had wonderful items from Wisconsin that people stepped up and donated. And so there's this wonderful silent auction with wine, and everybody's talking and all. In the meantime, we have this beautiful culinary stage that has been set up by Allen Kitchens out of Madison.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And this year, the culinary stage was really over the top. It was gorgeous. And then I worked with Madison College, their culinary program.
Very good program.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful program. And the students they turn out are just superb. And so we had six students who donated their time to do all the prep, haul everything over, set up things on the stage, and then assist as needed.
Oh, wow.
And then for our honorary sous chef, we had Dr. Stephen Nakata, who's the chairman of the Department of Urology at UW School of Medicine.
Well, you'd help that he would have some good skills since he's a surgeon.
He's got great knife skills.
Well, Chrissy, I think the event sounds great, but I want to make sure that we have a chance to help our listeners out with their upcoming Thanksgiving. And I'm sure we'll mention the event also when Dr. Gerard is on just a little later. But, you know, you were talking about how, you know, it's so important to have the things that taste like home and family and childhood. And certainly, I think desserts are one of those things. But you shared with us a couple of recipes, and we'll make sure these recipes are available a little later up online. But for desserts, you do a pumpkin swirl cheesecake and also a butternut squash pie. Why butternut squash instead of pumpkin?
Well, you know, just for something a little bit different, people always think of butternut squash as a vegetable that you cook and put on the table. Often it is pureed and, you know, heaped up in a bowl and it's hot and there it is. But butternut squash has a very similar flavor to pumpkin, so that if you roast it and then just puree that and use that as your filling instead of pumpkin, particularly canned pumpkin, it has a slightly lighter flavor. but absolutely divine.
Mm.
And I roast mine in the oven. I just split it in half and scoop out the seeds and then put it on a baking tray and stick it in the oven and roast it until it's soft, until a knife goes in and it's nice and soft. That takes about an hour.
And you don't bother peeling it before you roast it?
No. And then you, after it cools, then you scoop the pulp out of the shell, which is why you don't want to peel it. And so it's real easy to do, and you can do that while you're working on other things. I always do mine a day or two ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just scoop out the pulp, put it in a bowl, cover it, and stick it in the fridge.
Yeah.
And then it will weep out some moisture, which you'll see in the bottom of the bowl. I just pour that off before I use it. But you use it then just like your canned pumpkin
mm-hmm.
filling. So, but it has a beautiful, beautiful flavor. Very similar to pumpkin, just slightly lighter.
And just to remind people, we're talking with Chef Kristy Rost. She is an author of cookbooks, and also her PBS Holiday Special, which is an annual event, will be on Wisconsin Public Television this weekend. It's called A Home for Kristy Rost Thanksgiving. And we would welcome your calls about Thanksgiving, dishes you make, dishes you dread, dishes you love, who you share your holiday with. Any of those things would be wonderful to share. And Kristy is with us for about another 15 minutes. So join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Miller Show. And Laura posted there saying, my grandpa always had wild rice for Thanksgiving. When I met my husband, no one in his family had ever eaten wild rice, so that first Thanksgiving just wasn't right. It's funny that I thought that wild rice must be on everyone's table. Ever since that first Thanksgiving, I've made my grandpa's wild rice. It took a few years for everyone to try it, but now most of them love it just like I do. I don't know if you saw, Kristy, the New York Times did a Thanksgiving state-by-state map, and they actually, for the dish that was supposed to be quintessentially Wisconsin, it was actually a wild rice and mushroom side dish.
Oh, I absolutely adore that, and I love the comment that the listener wrote. I think that is so typical, you know, to grow up with something and everyone else goes, huh? And and yet to be able to bring that in and make that part of the tradition of the new family,
mm-hmm.
I think is superb.
I have to say that
there was
quite an uproar about the New York Times assigning us the wild rice and mushroom side dish. Not that there's anything wrong with it, and wild rice is a big part of Wisconsin culture, but we are the country's largest producer of cranberries. So
cranberries,
it felt like there
right.
was a missed opportunity there. And apparently it's some kind of grape salad for Minnesota, which it doesn't seem like a lot of people know what that is. So
grape salad.
Yeah. there was
who knew?
Not even Minnesota from the comments I've heard. So
I'm going to have to find out what it was for Texas. I'm sure
yes,
there's pecans in it somewhere.
Probably, which sounds good. Another comment on Facebook from Nina. Speaking of tradition, my grandparents, both from Rhinelander, that's way up north in Wisconsin, always insisted on having rutabaga. Of course, the you have to have a spoonful of everything rule was in place, and I absolutely dreaded that rutabaga. Every year, my grandmother would say, oh, it's so sweet, and I thought she was crazy. But now, as an adult, I like it, and every year we say, it's so sweet, in honor of my grandparents.
Oh, isn't that great?
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, I think it really is a holiday where often, you know, family members who even aren't physically with us anymore are really still part of the celebration.
They really are. It's like setting a place for them at the table, even though they aren't there, because their dish has presence.
Yes.
Yes.
And Daniel also commented on Facebook, neither of my folks were what you would call gourmet chefs. We ate a lot of canned yams and white bread and sage stuffing. As an adult, I've taught myself how to cook and experiment with traditional dishes. My sweet potatoes now are baked and dressed with orange zest, maple syrup, sea salt, and red pepper, topped with a real pat of butter.
Oh,
I know.
I love it. That
I know.
Fantastic.
But you
it
know,
really
I bet
does.
If he tasted that white bread stuffing, it would bring back a lot of memories for him.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I grew up on too. It really is. And in the early years, I used to make both. Then I would make
mm-hmm.
that, and then the cornbread dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my Southwestern friends learned to even like the bread stuffing because I, you know, gave it plenty of flavor and stuff. The sweet potato story, though, that really brings back memories because it sounds very similar to my experience. My mom would open the can, and there were the sweet potatoes, and it had the marshmallow
yep.
stuff on it.
It was the Princess Yam can. I remember the Princess Yams.
Yes, yes. And so I have a really great recipe for sweet potatoes that I like to make, and it's on my website at ChristyRoss.com. You just click on recipes and scroll down to holidays, and it's a sweet potato casserole, but I parboil my sweet potatoes, peel them, and then slice them, about an inch and a half thick, and I line them up in a casserole dish, and then I make this wonderful syrup with the juice of canned apricots and a little bit of apple cider and some brown sugar and some cinnamon and nutmeg and all of that. And then I add the apricot halves in there and bring all that nice and hot until it's syrupy and pour that over the sweet potatoes. And then you can put cranberries, since you're the cranberry state, in the center of all the apricot halves, and it looks really, really pretty. And the best thing about this, besides the fact that it tastes so fabulous, is that you can make it 2 or 3 days ahead
right.
and stick it in the fridge and then just bake it at the end.
Well, so, and I'll share a different sweet potato recipe. We actually eat this year-round, but I bet it's also going to appear on our Thanksgiving table. I just cube sweet potatoes, about an inch and a half cubes, and I just toss the cubes with olive oil, salt, and then garam masala seasoning. It's an Indian seasoning, and for people who might be interested, it's GARAMMASALA, and it's a whole mixture of really warming spices. And so there's a little sweetness because there's cinnamon in there, but then there's also peppers and things like that. So it's a really nice, and then I just put them on a baking dish and roast them for about 20 minutes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really delicious.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
And so it's not it's not an identifiably sweet dish, but it really it complements the sweetness of the sweet potatoes.
And it has beautiful color.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
And color is so important because turkey is so white.
Yes.
And to, you know, and gravy so brown.
And rabbit too. Right. Well, speaking
of things of color.
Speaking of gravy, Andrew in Madison has a question for us. So let's go there. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Thank you all for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I've actually been cooking gravy for about 100 to 150 people all morning. And it's the first time that I've ever cooked where near that much. I love cooking at home, and I'm actually a vegan. And so it's a vegan kind of mushroom gravy, and then there's some folks who are gluten-free at the community center that I'm cooking for, so it's also gluten-free. And I guess my question and the advice that I was looking for is I'm already a little bit too far into it to get really good advice. if you have any kind of advice for first-time bulk cookers and maybe anything that I could keep in mind as I taste it to see how I've done with a few minutes left.
Well, first of all, Andrew, hats off to you for cooking gravy for 150 people.
No kidding. I'm saluting right now.
And so is this for a community meal, Andrew?
It is, yeah. It's for the Badger Rock Neighborhood Center on the south side of Madison tomorrow night.
Oh, that's wonderful. So,
congratulations to you for getting involved in that. That's fantastic.
That's great.
And what are you doing to thicken the gravy?
Since
it's gluten-free.
Right, yeah. So I kind of concocted my own mixture of gluten-free flours because the co-op didn't have a great one that I really wanted to buy. So it's a mix of quinoa flour, chickpea flour, arrowroot powder, and some cornstarch.
Oh, perfect.
Wow.
Perfect. And have you started that process yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. So I've got I let the gravy, I kind of let some veggie broth and the flour sit while I was preparing all the vegetables and the mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And then now it's all thickening on the stove at the moment.
Oh, wow. So have you tasted it yet?
No, I've got like 7.5 minutes left until I wanted to like really let it thicken up and taste it. And it's obviously very hot. You think I should taste it now?
Oh, thank you. Just a minute. I'll get a spoon. I'm dying to know what it tastes like. My mouth is watering.
Well, hold on a second. I got to let it out and then not burn my tongue.
Well, so I think one thing that might help Andrew Christie is that when he tastes it, either now or, you know, in 7.5 minutes when the timer goes off, like how much different might the flavor or like saltiness or, you know, the amount of spices or herbs, will that change at all as it sits until, I think you said this evening's meal or?
Right. Yeah. And he's so right to let it cook a long time until it all cooks down and all, because it's a different flavor profile when you're working all veggies. And so that allows time for those veggies to really impart their flavors into this gravy. I think that is absolutely fantastic that he's already done that.
Yeah.
And I'm impressed that he's saying, well, it has 7 more minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say, other than baking, I can't say that I ever do that.
Right, right.
It's like, I'm sure it's ready by now. So I also think that by making it a day ahead, so many dishes improve with flavor.
It's really true.
Sit. And so the flavors meld together and become this beautiful bouquet for your mouth and for your nose, because, you know, we smell before we ever taste.
Right.
So did you take that taste yet, Andrew?
I am like blowing on the gravy now.
You're blowing.
That's
well, you'll
great.
Have to Facebook back and let me know how it was. Okay.
Ooh, it's very good. It's very good.
Oh, good. Right. Good. And you know, you can always add a little sherry to it if it just needs something.
Isn't that funny that you said that? Because I often, if I'm sauteing mushrooms, like to put in an omelet or next to a piece of meat or something, I often put a little sherry in and let it. You know, I wait till the mushrooms have kind of released their liquid, add a little sherry to that, and then let them soak it back up.
Yes. And in fact, when I make a, you know, like a beautiful creamy mushroom soup or something, I often add just a tiny bit of sherry to that because it just kind of adds that little je ne sais quoi flavor note.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, we have a couple more callers and not too much more time with you, Christie. So let's go back to the phones and Kristen in Madison. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Kristen.
Hi. One funny comment and one quick question.
Sure.
I grew up in central Wisconsin, and my brother and I always had this inside kind of joke going on at the Thanksgiving table each year, when every year, without fail, my mom would have two items on the table that we never understood. And one was this so-called relish tray, where it would be this plate of basically raw carrots.
That's a supper onion. Club tradition, the relish tray.
My mom did that in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. That's right out of Wisconsin supper clubs.
Oh, that's funny, because my brother and I would sit there and be like, what is this?
Yeah.
But now, as an adult, it sort of cleanses the palate between all of the heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It totally makes sense now. Mm-hmm. But we used to laugh about that. My question for you is, my mom put us, my boyfriend and I, in charge this year of bringing the sort of healthy veggie side. And he's a good cook. If it were up to me, I would throw like Brussels sprouts and asparagus and green beans in a bowl and just call it good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you have any fun recipes for something like that you could advise us of or point out.
Okay, good.
I bet she does.
Good.
So
well,
something
all,
a little less heavy.
I would do Judith sweet potatoes that she talked about.
That was tossing them with olive oil and garam masala.
And then also, I would roast asparagus, you know, like just a heaping pile of roasted asparagus, and bring that as well, because it's easy to just heat it up in the oven again to just warm it a bit. You don't want to overcook it anyway. And do you know how to roast asparagus? You just turn your oven to about 400 degrees, and you toss them, after you trim them and all, you toss them with just a little bit of olive oil and some kosher salt, and just pop them in the hot oven. And they only take about 8 to 10 minutes, depending on your oven. And they should get nice and brown, not totally, but, you know, bits of them. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely fabulous. So there's a real easy side dish. To do, I would definitely suggest you go to my website at kristyrost.com. That's R-O-S-T.
And why don't you spell Christy, too, because there are a lot of different
Christy
ways.
C-H-R-I-S-T-Y.
So
and
Christy
R-O-S-T.
Rost. Yes, kristyrost.com.
And I have a whole list of vegetable side dishes there that are really, really yummy.
Thank you for that call, Kristen. And we will move now to Mike in Bruce. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to tell you about a little variation that may be useful for your last caller, Sue. I started doing a number of years ago, and it's to stuff squash and pumpkins. And the idea is both to use them as a cooking vessel, but also they look nice as long as you don't overdo them. Pretty nice on the table as well. Yeah. And basically you do the same when you carve a pumpkin for help.
Okay, you're really cutting out, Mike. Hello?
Okay,
there he is.
Hello.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically you do the same approach as you would to hollow out a pumpkin for Halloween, except obviously you don't put the face in and you want to save the cap. And you take out all the seeds and the mushy part of the middle, and you could, is this best done with like a buttercup squash or a sugar pie pumpkin that's about 6 or 7 inches in diameter. And if you're going to go the vegan route, you can save that, those innards, the seeds and the pulp, and do, make a little stock with that with some other vegetables that, and maybe some, I save for the vegan version. You can do like shiitake mushrooms and save the stems and put them in the stock. And then you could cook some kind of grain. So either a rice, my favorite is brown rice and wild rice combination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you cook that in that stock. And if you want to go savory, you can also do, chicken stock or whatever. And I do a number of versions. I have a family member who's vegetarian, so I'll do a vegan version for them and whatever. But basically how you assemble is you want to, in a case where you're using savory, you can do cream a little butter with a heavy dose of salt and pepper and rub that on the inside of the pumpkin or the inside of the squash. And I say heavy seasoning because, you know, you're seasoning a lot of squash or a lot of pumpkin just from the layer.
Right. And Mike, we're really running short on time. So can you let us know, like, how do you serve it then at the end?
Well, you roast it with your stuffing, which, like I say, is usually some kind of rice or quinoa goes well as well, and mushrooms and sausage if you want to go the savory route, and nuts. Chestnuts or walnut, and you stuff that into the pumpkin, and then you roast it off, you know, oil the outside of the pumpkin or the outside of the squash, and then you roast that off, and if you filled it adequately, it should actually start to kind of creep out the top and make that cap sit at a jaunty level, if you will, a jaunty angle, and
jaunty's
it
good.
Really shows well to, you know, have a couple of those on the table as you put the rest of your items out.
And that sounds great, Mike. I'm sorry, but we're
That's really great.
Tight on time here. But that sounds like a wonderful way to use the foods of the season. But, Christy, I wanted to make sure we share. Janny actually posted to Facebook because we were wondering what that grape salad that the New York Times said is the Minnesota dish is. See, we have the most wonderful listeners. They always help us out.
I think that's great. I love when people participate.
So the grape salad, this does not fall under seasonal or healthy, probably. It's 1/2 cup of brown sugar to start with, 8 ounces of sour cream. It's a cup of crushed pineapple drained. It's an 8 ounce tub of Cool Whip thawed. It's a cup of walnut pieces, and it's 1.5 pounds of green grapes or red, and you mix it and chill it and eat it. So there you go. There is the grape salad. That was up on our Facebook page if anyone wants to add that. Well, Christy, obviously we could have talked for hours, but we are out of time. But thank you so much for spending the time with us, and I hope you'll come back again. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Judith. It has been a real pleasure, and especially talking to another food enthusiast. I mean, you know.
Well, and you were talking to many thousands because our listeners love to cook and love to eat and love to grow their own food, too.
I love people of Wisconsin. Absolutely. And, of course, they can check out my newest book, Celebrating Home. It is full of recipes that are really made for people who love to cook and love to eat together as family and friends.
And again, your website is christyrost.com, and we'll make sure that that's easily accessible from the Facebook page.
Judith, it's been a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your loved ones and to all the listeners.
And to you as well, Christy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Christy Rost is a chef, and she has an annual PBS holiday special that will be on Wisconsin Public Television this weekend. You can go to WPT.org for those specific. It's airing tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. And talking about Thanksgiving really means thinking about family for a lot of us, I think. It certainly came through in our conversation with Christy. The sad fact is, though, it's the rare family that has not been touched by cancer. And as Christy Rost was saying, her father received great care and support. Her whole family really received support from the UW Carbone Cancer Center. And as a result, we're going to talk with one of the doctors there who treated Christy's father. Coming up next, it's potentially life-saving information about urological cancers. So I hope you'll stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.